Again, so last time we started, and we did part one. There's a bunch of parts, and tonight we're hopefully going to do two and maybe three. Just recap what we did last week. We talked about the reasons for lab-created meat. They like to call it clean meat, by the way. The companies that make this stuff, they don't like the term lab-grown or anything that has to do with a lab. It doesn't make it sound so good. They just call it clean meat. They complain. They say, you know, do you call it, lab-grown... I don't know. What did they say? Lab-grown milk? Because they do stuff to the milk in between. Do they call it lab-grown Coca-Cola? No, it's just Coca-Cola. So they want it to be just known as clean meat. Why? Because it's a cleaner process. So let's just go over the benefits of this kind of thing. It's better for the environment because cows are quite bad for the environment. It could potentially be healthier because once you're doing genetic manipulation, you can always make it whatever you want. You have a high fat content, a low fat content, possibly a low sodium content.
So just double check. So we're talking about this stuff. When you're saying lab created, you mean
so
it's originating from.
Yes. So let me go over. Let me go over the process as I understand it, and I have a note about that as well. The process is that you take a piece of the cow. Let's say you pick a piece of an animal. You take stem cells. So it basically doesn't matter where you take it from, but generally you take it from the muscles. And they take those stem cells and they grow them in a medium until they become, they program, so the medium could be anything. Right now, as far as I know, it's blood, generally. In order
blood
to,
of the animal that...
No. In order to deliver nutrients, it's bovine blood, generally speaking. Last I checked, it wasn't kosher blood, it was blood of a non-kosher animal, but of course blood is not kosher anyways, so it almost doesn't matter, though we'll get to that.
It's kosher, it's parve, they told me it's
been parve. That's already down the line.
That's a punchline.
Yeah, that's already way down at the end. So they take the piece of the animal, they take stem cells, and stem cells means that these cells, they could be anything. That's what that means. Stem cells can be anything. They can be manipulated. They can be programmed. They can be genetically programmed to become whatever you want it to do. So they program them to become muscles because that's what you want to eat. And that grows in this medium fed with nutrients. I was just reading now they electrostimulate them as well to help the muscles grow. Just fascinating. That's just crazy. It's like a little piece of meat that you're like, you know, shocking and everything. Although I think this is the basis. Didn't they grow a heart? A few years ago, they grew an actual heart, I think, for a human, I think, a while ago.
Yes,
I remember it was big in the news. And how do you grow it? You have to do stuff to it, you know? So that's the way it works. So the questions that abound with this is, number one, what animal did it come from? It doesn't matter. Was the animal alive or dead? Was it shechted? What is the nature of the media that they are putting it in? Is it this blood? Is it non-kosher blood? Is it something else? Something neutral? Does it matter? Because it's growing
it's
in that.
From it, right?
It's growing from it. Yeah, it's growing from it. How large is the? I should mention that one of the people who listens on the internet, Grant Harris, he told me that he actually did the branding for this company, Aleph Farms, which is one of the Israeli companies that's doing it. And he gave me the WhatsApp of the owner, of the CEO. So I sent him a WhatsApp today because he said he would be happy to answer my questions. He hasn't answered yet. But I asked him a bunch of questions, including how large is the sample that they take. So I'm wondering if they take a large sample or a small sample, that's going to actually directly impact on what we're going to talk about tonight.
I think we should go on a class trip and
yeah, that's right, Hashem. Maybe we will. Maybe I can arrange that. We'll see. We'll see how my conversations go with his French Orthodox Jew. Oh, living in Israel. Okay. So that's going to directly impact on what we're going to talk about tonight, the size of it. Other issues. What are other issues? Oh, the last issue becomes whether or not it's considered flesh or parif. Is it considered fleshik or is it considered parav at the end of the day? So that's all the things that we brought as a preamble last time.
Yeah, let me ask you a question that maybe you're going to get to it yet. The fact that it may be grown in dam, and that's the culture, and that's the supplement that it's kosher blood, and we know that blood itself is not kosher.
Yeah, there's no such thing as kosher blood.
We're not eating the blood, it's just a medium for it to grow in.
Right.
Does that automatically prohibited the fact that it's grown in blood?
It might or it might not. We're actually probably not going to talk about that tonight, but just to give you Masha Lama Davar Domet, how do we make cheese?
Right.
You take milk, and then there's the rennet that they use, which is rennet is not kosher, which is one of the big issues when making cheese.
And it's not kosher.
Certain kinds of cheese.
The
davar mamid, exactly. That's one of the things that we're going to talk about, but not tonight. So the what we did talk about last time actually was miracle meat. Brought up a bunch of cases in Chazal and in the Midrash that talk about situations where an animal was created using, let's call it Kabbalah. Yes, Sefer Yetzira or some other thing, and it was created that way. And it seems from across the board, when an animal is created that way, it is A, always kosher. B, it seems that it can be eaten while it's alive. There's no Isser Favor Min Achai.
Wow.
And C, it's Parav. Right.
It's
and C, it's Parav. The source for Parav is the fact that the Midrash says that Avram served milk and meat. The Torah definitely says that he served both milk and meat to the angels, the malachim, or the people that came to his house. You could easily just say he served them separately, or you could say that it's before the Torah was given, but the Midrash chooses to say, well, the Malbim quotes the Midrash as saying that it was okay because he made the animal. He made the animal, as the Malbim says, he made the animal out of Sefer Yetzirah. This Malbim is quoted the halacha, for other issues. He says the one that he wanted ran away.
Yeah.
So he made him. He made it. He replaced it with another one that he made. That's how the Malbim understands it. That's the one case. There was another case where two Amorayim used to make Elgla Tilta, a young calf, every Erev Shabbos. That's what they ate on Shabbos. They make it out of Sefer Yetzirah every week. And the Gemara assumes that whenever that happens, it's always kosher, completely kosher. That Midrash seems to say that it's Parav. Now, at the end, we discuss whether or not that is similar to what we're dealing with. On the one hand, it's something that's created. It's not born to a mother. And so Rav Shechter actually thinks that that's good enough. In other words, what we learn from all of those halachot, they're not really halachot. What we learn from all those stories, the conclusion is that if an animal is not born to a mother, then it's not an animal. And it's not fleshik. So Rav Shechter actually believes
it
should be parav. It didn't. You mean our case?
Yeah.
You mean our case?
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So our case, not only did it derive from a parent, one can say it's a completely natural process that happens. In other words, we're not breaking any rules of nature when we go through this process. We're manipulating nature. So the fact that it looks like it came from nothing. It didn't come from nothing, and it didn't come from Kabbalah. So, based on a Meiri, you could definitely say that it is still considered, coming from the parent. But Shechter is convinced that it's not. Shechter actually says that he thinks that it's for sure kosher, and it should be parav. If it's not parav, it's only midrabanan. Rabbi Bleich,
that he closed.
Theoretically, yeah. Rabbi Bleich says in this case it's not, you don't have to shecht it, it's not there's nothing to shecht, it's not a live animal. There's nothing to shecht, it's just meat. We're not creating an animal, we're just creating meat. We're not cloning an animal,
but if you did
came from a stem cell, but we're not creating an animal.
But if you doesn't need to be shecht. An animal.
What?
If you did create an animal from a stem cell,
if Shechter would still say he wouldn't need to shecht it.
Right.
Because he has a radical, he has really,
and then all of it, and then you could create an entire,
in theory,
entire,
yeah, in theory, single. In theory.
It's not crazy. It's not born from. It's you've taken a stem cell. As soon as you take a stem cell, it's not a thing anymore. It's not a living object anymore.
No, it's not. But Rabbi Bleich says it's still from an animal. It's an animal. It's the material that came from an animal. So why would you consider it anything other than animal? Yeah, that's what Rabbi Bleich thinks. And many others. Rav Asher Weiss as well. Rav Asher Weiss told the OU that they should consider. The OU officially, as of now, put out a statement that it's probably going to be fleshik.
Really?
That they'll certify it as Basari. Rav Asher Weiss told them that. Rav Shechter, they're going to ignore for now, I think. But I'm going to access. Because in general, the way that most kosher agencies work is that when you have an issue like this, they usually go to Chumrah. They don't go to Kulan things.
That's probably
like
a Maritain thing.
Maritain is a separate issue.
You can have two pieces of meat and say one is
there's
part
a separate
of
issue.
Inflation.
There's going to be a separate
that's
issue.
That's part of it.
So that's Maritain.
Yeah. Well, Maritain could be a separate issue. This is more fundamental. This is saying, is it fleshik or not? Rav Asher Weiss says it's fleishik. Rav Shachter says it probably shouldn't be. The OU is going to go with fleishik. I don't think because of Marisayin. No. I think because they say, you know,
with chis.
Generally speaking, the OU takes reasonable chumras. That's my understanding. Now tonight we're going to talk about something else.
Lives or doesn't live or whatever.
Right.
And he was saying that non-kosher meat and kosher meat is a totally different taste and tastes different to ours. And he said,
that non-kosher meat's better.
Another colleague was there also, and she's from Russian descent, and he's also eat anything. And she was saying, and her husband is Argentinian, and he also eat anything. And he says, no way with, like, you know, Argentina or anywhere like that, you know, buy into this. Stop eating meat
right
at any given time.
Right, so there is some question whether or not this is ever going to catch on.
It's also
over time, it probably will. Over time, it probably will, but not right away. Over time, it will probably catch on, but not right away. They haven't worked out the taste yet.
For sure, this will be amazing.
No, they haven't worked it out yet. It's not. Yeah, the one that the first one was made in 2013. It cost $325,000. And apparently it wasn't very good. And even now, I think they say they haven't really perfected it. It's only a matter of time. But
because if they take our steps from filet,
they're going to have to do extra things to it. Because you realize that the fat also contributes to the taste, and they're not going to be able to do fat. So you're going to have to figure something else out. So they're going to have to do some tweaks. Tonight, what I want to talk about is a different subject, and this is the subject of microscopic objects in halacha. This is why I wanted to know from this CEO, you know, how large is the sample that they take? Although even if it is a large sample, I'm pretty sure that what actually gets put into the media is actually quite small, microscopic, in fact, because it's going to be stem cells, right? You can't see cells. So what's the status of that in halacha? So we'll start. The Gemara in Yuma says, Amar Rav Papa, Tzoabim Koma, Asur Likrot Kriyat Shema. All right, everybody's hungry. So if you have if you have feces on the ground, so you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema in front of that. Hechidami idinireit pshita. If you can see it, of course not. Idilonireit lonit and Torah lemalei chayshar. If it's a tiny, minuscule piece of feces, then what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to be looking around all the time. You know, let's say you have babies in the house. Are you supposed to like search the room like for chametz every time you want to daven in the house? That's crazy. The yoshe lo tzricha. So obviously not. The yoshe v'niret omid v'enir. Now the answer is that if you were to sit there and you can see it while you're sitting, then that's considered niret omid v'enir. That's fine too. If you're standing and you can't see it from there, basically, if you can see it from where you are, then it's a problem. If you can't see it from where you are, then it is not a problem. Right? This is why one of the things that we're going to see is, you know, when you're searching, looking in etrog. You know, sometimes when they have, like in movies, when somebody's like looking at an etrog, they take out like a microscope or something. Right. It's completely not la halacha. If you can't see it, like from here, basically, they say, then it's not, doesn't count as a psul. So anyways, Rabbi Baich explains as follows. He says, at issue is the nature of the principle that subclinical phenomena are to be disregarded. Subclinical means anything that you can't see with your eyes. The concept can be understood in two distinct ways. So he wants to make a chakira about why is it that things that are really small, not visible to the naked eye, are irrelevant or not going to be considered in halacha. He says, one way of understanding it is as follows. The Torah simply ignores any and all subclinical entities and phenomena and regards them as non-existent. That notion mirrors the reasoning of Reish Lakish, who maintains that a quantity of forbidden food less than the minimum for which statutory punishment is prescribed is entirely permissible according to biblical law because, in effect, the Torah completely disregards its existence. A.K.A., Pachot Mikashir. Right? Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish have a machloket that Pachot Mikashir. You know, normally the Torah says that in order to be chayav in eating chazir, I have to eat kezayit. Right? So what's the status of if I eat less than a kezayit? So everybody agrees I don't bring a korban. But is it mutar or is it asur? Reish Lakish actually says that it's mutar. Rav Yochanan says it's asur. So that's a huge machlokes. We pass like Rav Yochanan. We pass like Rav Yochanan, anyways. That is biblically asur. But Rabbi Lech is just saying mashalama davar domeh. Just like Reish Lakish says that less than a kezayit, the Torah doesn't care about. meaning it says that's not considered relevant. So too, over here, the Torah may say that anything that's smaller than what the eye can see does not matter at all. It just doesn't exist. That's one option. Option number two, the phenomena are indeed recognized as real, but since the Torah was given to human beings rather than to angels, no mandate or stricture can be attendant upon such entities or phenomena unless and until there is perceivable evidence of such entity or occurrence. Another way of saying, the Torah is makel on us. It does exist. It for sure is there. The Torah is not ignoring it. It's just telling us that when we act, what we do, we don't have to consider it relevant.
Yep. You're reminding me, a number of years ago, I'm sure you remember, there was an issue about
copepods.
In the water in New York.
Right.
Tiny little bugs in the water. And there were some rabbanim who were insisting that everybody put a filter on their pipes.
Most rabbanim. Most rabbanim.
Yeah. Well, not the Rabbi Arshul, by the way. Rabbi Goldstein said no.
Okay.
Rabbi Goldstein said, I like some protein in my water. That's what he said. That's what he said to me. I asked about it. He said, no, you don't need a filter. But how does that jive with this? These are little bugs that I can't see.
The argument was that you can't see them.
If I hold a glass of water, I can't see those.
Asher Fruchter came into our house.
Yeah.
He was living in Israel, so he didn't have to worry about it too much. Came into our house, he poured himself a glass of water, and then went like this, and he goes, oh, I see one.
Right.
It happened.
He said he did. Yeah. Okay.
They were meant to be visible. If they were microscopic, then everybody would agree that it's okay, and we're about to see that right now. But the idea was that they were actually visible. I don't know, it's a machlokas about Matthias, I guess. You know, could you see them, could you not see them? But that's what it was. So here you go. Haim, this is Rav Avadi Yosef Zatzal. He says, Haim yesh yisur betolaim animtzaim b'mayim o b'peirot, gam k'sheinam nirim la'ayin klal, elarak alidei microscope. So he's talking here about bugs in fruit. What's the status of bugs in fruit that are really, 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 really small? So, Tshuva, hadavar barur. Barur. Shekol ma sha'asa Torah b'dvar ha'matulim b'bedika al-yidei ri'ya, inam ele al-yidei ri'ya tivit. The only thing that the Torah asers is things that you can see with the natural eye. Ke adam yor al-einayim, ulamar einav yishpot, aval lo al-yidei ri'ya b'microscope v'zchuchit megadelet. You don't use a magnifying glass or a microscope. Lachen, tolayim she'inam nirayim ayin klal, ein ba'em shum isur af apish nirayim hem al-yidei zchuchit megadelet u'microscope. Don't count. V'chein kazev b'seif v'mori or sh'otam rimasim k'tanim ma'od she'inam nirim ela alidei microscope b'chomet v'b'kemach lo chashu lehem chachamim klal. Rak bo'otam anirim la'ayin yesh lachush lehem b'shum isur tula'im av b'shehem k'tanim ma'od. He quotes other authorities that say you don't have to worry about it. He quotes Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein in the Aruch HaShulchan. Everybody quotes the Aruch HaShulchan. V'chein kazev gon Rav Shlomo Kluger shebdikav z'chuchit megadelat ahinu microscope lo ma'ala v'lo morida mitzad halacha. It doesn't matter what you find in there. He says, the bottom line is, if you take a cup of water, if you were to look with a microscope, it doesn't matter where you got the water from, you would find things.
Bacteria.
Everything. You would find all kinds of things in there. He goes on, if you can see it with your naked eye, even if it requires the sun to see it, you know, you would have to go like this in order to see it, that's still going to be asur. But if you can't see it with your eye, then they don't count. And that's his sikum. He says, nothing like that is going to be asur. Okay. Rav Shlomo Aviner, in an essay about this lab-grown meat, addresses this issue. Okay, so he's going to actually address this issue from this vantage point. He addresses all the issues in this essay, and we'll see his stuff in different parts of the Makorot. But in this, he says, "V'kol shekein b'mikra shelanu ki ata lo nir la'ayin." The cell itself, the stem cells that we're talking about, they're not visible. V'atara lo nidna l'bali microscope lo l'bali telescope. The Torah wasn't given to owners to those who have a telescope or a microscope. Hayinei b'sefer chochmat Adam katav shim yistaklu derech a microscope l'toch chometz yiru bo hamon tolaim. This is what we saw. If you really would look at water, you would see all kinds of stuff. And he quotes the Aruch HaShulchan, shamati shepakol minei mayim lelei bru'im dakim she'ein ha'ayin yuchala lirotam. Rechiel Michal Epstein, writing in the 19th century, also says, you know, I heard that there's all kinds of stuff in all kinds of water. And he's right. goes on, he quotes the Tiferes Yisrael, Al Dag She'ein Lo Kaskasim. He said, the Tiferes Yisrael, commentary on the Mishnayos, he says he heard about a fish that it only has microscopic scales. Scales are so small. I don't know if it's the eel. He says you can only see them by Ezrad Zchuchit Megadelet Reim Kaskasim Hem Lo Nechshavim Mibchina Al Chatit. So that's a chumrah, right? In other words, everything we saw now is a kula. That if you can't see it with a microscope, then it doesn't count, so you can ignore it. So here he says, you also have to ignore these scales, because the scales would make it kosher.
Does it have a fin? Doesn't it have a fin? It must have scales?
I don't know. I wouldn't rely on that. It has to have snapir mekaskasi. Here that's the chumrah, right? Because he says you have to ignore it. He also quotes from Moshe Feinstein. Says lagabei tolaim shemash lo nira la'ayin ha'onashit ala bezra microscope zchukin megadelat in enach. Okay, we've seen this already. Now here's where it gets interesting. Quotes of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. See where it says halicha Shlomo. Pasak agomer Shlomo Zalman Auerbach shemei hanaharot va'agamim. The waters, the swamps, kigon meyam akineret v'chadome, ach im nitarvu behemashkin shel chametz bePesach mutal ishtotam. Even if chametz went into them, you're allowed to drink. Hove on Pesach. Hove ina tarovet morgeshet klal b'chushi adam, because you can't feel, you can't taste the chametz. Av shebechaye chodno shel gorom shom zaman arbach, v'ari leiv rechamkin hishtam shirak b'mayim shenishavu kodem bePesach. Even though they actually didn't use that water, they used only water that was from before Pesach, so it would have been batel. Erev Pesach, and he says Ulam b'shanim she'achar kach lo nahakin. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach later, you know, didn't act that way. He drank from the tap. Fine. We're going to get back to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach soon. We quote Rav Shlomo Moshe Sternbach. He talks about if a Sefer Torah, if you see that in a Sefer Torah two letters are so close together that it looks like they're touching. So can you look with a magnifying glass to see if they're touching or not? And if you see the magnifying glass that there's a separation between them, does that count? So Rav Moshe Sternbach says, what are you talking about? No, that doesn't count. As long as it looks like they're together, then you're in trouble. Right?
Consistent, yeah.
Yeah. He quotes Rav Yosef again at the end. Yabia Omer, Shtalat Kesef Shemut. This one's actually funny. Rav Yosef says, can you go into the bathroom with bills of money that on them are written tiny little pieces of Megillot Agnuzot Misefer Yeshayahu? What is this? I don't know what this is. Ubehem Atzkarot Shem Shamayim. Somebody has money that on it is written tiny little pieces of Sefer Yeshayahu. Is that on Israeli bills?
I don't know.
Are you kidding me?
American money says, in God we trust.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
I mean, that's what you're saying.
No,
yeah, but you can read it.
Is that a pasuk?
Well, it's got quotes on it.
Let me see.
No, but
I never knew that.
No, but...
Okay, but that's very big, actually.
Yeah, it has to be something you can't see.
He's saying that there's tiny little things that you need a magnifying glass to read it.
This is somewhat sure from 50 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's old. I don't know. Anyways, he says, because it's hard to see it, then... okay, he says, Dai b'kisoy achad. He doesn't say all the way, but you can just cover it once as opposed to double kisoy. Fine. Spoiler alert. Rav Shlomo Avinero will read the ending. He has a sikum. He says, "Nirasha basar zeinu taref, einu ever minachai, veinu b'sari." All right, he goes all the way, Rav Avinero. He's going all the way. We didn't read the whole piece. We're going to see some of the other parts of it later, but I'm telling you now. This is what he says. Hiukumo basar tzimchi hanaaseh misoya mishum shlosh animukim. Number one, zelo talich regil shel yitzirat basar. That's what we saw last time. That it's not a natural way of doing it. Number two, huavar harbesh shinuyim sheshinu et mahuto. We'll get to that when we talk about gelatin. Number three, hamakor lo nira la'ayin. That's our sugya right now. Vein bayal amaritayin. That's going to be a later sugya. So according to Rav Avinero, this is like man mishamayim. It's not. It's vegetarian, beefy meat. All right, and it's totally fine no matter what.
Quality.
No matter what, it's totally fine. It sounds like even pig, any animal, it doesn't matter what animal you take it from, doesn't matter. Because it's not meat anymore once you take the cells. Why? And part of the reason is because this is the argument. The argument is that the cells are so small that they're no longer considered halachically anything. They become nothing. They kind of drop off the radar of halacha, and then when they get grown again, they're no longer meat.
They don't have a chashivut, even though they're small.
Sounds like there's no such thing as chashivut. even if it's small. Well, when it's small. That's what it sounds like, right? That's what he's saying. Okay. So let's get back to Rabbi Bleich. All right? Rabbi Bleich writes as follows. He says, arguably, choice of one or the other of these two possible analyses of the principle has halachic ramifications. According to the second analysis, it is not the case that the law ignores subclinical contingencies, but that such a degree of meticulousness could not be demanded of a human being. It's not saying that they don't exist. It's just saying we aren't expected to be careful about these things.
We aren't capable of.
I'm not expected to examine my water for microscopic bacteria before I drink it. It's not that the bacteria doesn't exist. It's just I'm not expected to examine it. The law is not given to ministering angels, and humans cannot be held responsible for taking cognizance of what they cannot perceive upon gross examination. There may indeed be circumstances in which one of the theories may be germane, but the other irrelevant. It is a nafkamina, right? I know his English is, he's a lawyer. It is one thing to say that humans cannot be held responsible for imbibing creatures that they cannot possibly see, or for writing letters in Torah scroll without microscopic gaps between droplets of ink, but quite another to absolve them from responsibility for being attentive to subclinical phenomena whose occurrence can be deductively confirmed by ordinary means. So here what he said is that if you can tell that it's there,
it's measurable in some way.
It's measurable because you can see it by its byproduct. In other words, you know it's there because, look, it caused something. Then that's no longer lundit natar l'malecha
sharit. How, I don't get it. How do I know that it's in, from what byproduct do I know that it's, there's something in my glass of water?
No, you don't. You don't. No, that's not a good example. That's a good example of lundit natar l'malecha sharit. You can't do anything. It doesn't have any effect on the water. If it colored the water, right? Imagine, you know, one of these copepods, right? It had some kind of ink that, you know, if you had enough of them, so then it colored the water red. Would you still be allowed to drink it?
Then you got a byproduct that proves.
It would seem that Rabbi Bleich would say in that case, I mean,
it's an animal, but it's
there's the copepods right there. But and in this case, here, what are you going to say? You're going to say that the stem cells are so small that they're not relevant, that they don't exist? But look, they were used to make this meat, and without them, you couldn't make the meat. So how can you therefore still say that they're not relevant? That's only half of his argument, by the way. Another possible ramification of these two differing analyses of halachic disregard of subclinical phenomena is in the area of genetic engineering. And this is why I said we're going to get back to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Michas Shlomo, I have it on the next page. If you want, actually, let's look at it ourselves before we without reading it or Bleich. On the next page, he says, Benyan Sheilato B'davar Handasa Genetit. He was asked about genetic engineering. Shemachnisim chalkikei ta'im miberia achat l'shniya. He's talking about putting DNA from one animal into another animal. Okay? Ubazeh mishanim etuchunotea shel hashniya. You change the qualities of the second animal. V'aydezeh lahatir isur kilayim mikevan shein chalkikim elu nir'im le'in adam. Maybe we shouldn't be worried about what pops into our mind? Kilayim. You know, you're combining species. Not allowed to do that with vegetables, with fruit. So with animals, you're also not allowed to do it, right? So isn't that what you're doing when you combine the DNA? So you want to say, oh no, chalkikim elu nir'im la'in adam. They're not. You can't see the DNA. You can't see the cells that you're taking from one and putting to the other. So therefore, it should be mutter. So he says, no. Kevan she'anashim metaplim bechalkikim ha'ela u'ma'avivim otam mimin achad l'sheni. It's a chiddush that's very mistaber, though.
Sure.
It's a huge chiddush, but it also makes perfect sense. The moment you're able to manipulate them, you can no longer claim that you can't see them. It's one thing to say that I can drink water and I don't have to look through the microscope. It's another to say that I have tools that I use to take DNA from one animal and put it into the other. I can no longer claim that they're not visual, that they're not visible anymore. I'm manipulating them. I'm metaplim bahem. I can't claim that anymore. This is not, by the way, Rabbi's first argument. Rabbi's first argument is that if you can see their totza'ah, then you can no longer claim that they're not relevant. Here he's saying, if you're touching them, if you're using them, then you can't claim that they're no longer relevant. Amnam b'balei chayim, he ends up and he says that he doesn't think it's a problem of kilayim. but for a different reason. He says, "Balei chayim nirali nedaiti de'ein be'atzam asiya shum isur shel harva'a kivan shezerak aide havrat chomer mimin achad toch min bal chayacher v'rak ma'akavat etzim near esh de shapir asur." He says, when it comes, there's a big difference between kilayim with animals and kilayim with trees. Kilayim with trees, the problem is taking the chomer from one thing and putting it into the other thing. Right? You're taking seeds from over here and you're putting them next to seeds over there, and then the trees grow together, and I don't know how it works, but something along those lines. But with animals, kilayim is only one thing. You have to mate them. That's it. It's the only way that you can do kilayim with animals. You have to mate them. That's all. There's no other way of doing it. It doesn't count when you take a chomer from one and you put it into the other.
Is not called that?
No, it's not called mating. That's what he's saying. He's saying that's true of etzim, genetic engineering. There is genetic engineering by etzim, that's harkava. But over here by animals, rak shtei gufot mamash, he said.
But even with kilayim of plants, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm still allowed to eat these plants that are...
After they've been made, yes.
Yes.
We do. We do.
You do. So
most of the things that we...
The second generation. Not the first generation.
Really? What do you mean?
Isn't the first person who made the modern orange, which is...
Oh, you're talking about the
yeah.
Yeah, the nectarines. Once it's been made, you can plant it. You can use it. You can plant it again. You just can't graft them to begin with. But presumably non-Jews did it. I don't know. Who knows?
Even if a Jew does it.
Yeah, even if a Jew does it.
Doesn't make it forbidden.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, what do we got over here? So we had, on the one hand, we have Rav Aviner, and those like him. There are some others like him who say that, no, once it's not visual anymore, once it's you need a microscope to see it, it falls off the radar of halakha. And then when it grows again, it's no longer relevant anymore.
Are we implying from what he said, or are we inferring from what he said that applies to our case in
Rav
that
Aviner?
Way?
Yeah. He's talking about our case. He's talking about Basar Mitayim. That's the title of the essay.
Oh, okay.
And that's his conclusion over here. And the last thing that he says is Hamakor Lonira
Elayim. Okay, that's in the
sequel. Yeah. So he explicitly says it. Rabbi Bleich is skeptical, very skeptical, and I think rightly so, and he has two arguments for it. Number one, the fact that you have now in front of you a piece of meat, which is a direct byproduct, not a byproduct, it is a product of these stem cells, you can no longer claim that they fell off the radar. And the second argument is that once you're manipulating them, they never fell off the radar. They never fell off the radar because you're actually doing things with it. Yeah. Akshavei is going to be a term that we're going to see later when we get to the gelatin. I think this is even beyond that, because it's not even akshavei. This is once you're manipulating them, once you're touching them, then they no longer fall into the category of lo nid tor lemalachei asharit. Well, he just responded. Just responded. He wants the meat. CEO.
Oh, what do you write?
He wants the meat. Okay.
Invite him to the class. Yeah.
Maybe. So, good. That's that subject. Let's see if we have some time for the next one. I called this one, "Who's Your Daddy?" I give funny titles to each one of the subjects.
Hey, who's your daddy?
And fun. And this is the subject of Hayotze Min HaTame, Tame. This should be familiar to those of you who are in the Smicha, the Executive Smicha program from Yoredea. Hayotze Min HaTame, Tame. So where does this concept come from? It comes up in a lot of places, but here we have from the Gemara in Bechoros. It says, Behema Tohora Sheyalda Kemin Behema Tmeya Mutar Ba'achila. Utmeya Sheyalda Kemin Behema Tohora Asur Ba'achila. Sheyotze Min HaTame, Tame Ve'yotze Min HaTahor Tar. It's an amazing thing. If you have an animal, it's hard to imagine how this is possible, but sometimes the Gemara mentions things that aren't possible just to make the point, and it certainly helps us out over here. Let's say, imagine in your mind that you had a tahor, which is another way of saying a kosher animal, and it gave birth to a non-kosher animal. A cow gave birth to a pig. All right, how does it happen? I don't know, but a cow gave birth to a pig. Pig's kosher. Hayotze min ha-tahor tahor. On the other hand, pig gives birth to a cow. Cow is not kosher. That's what the Gemara says. Okay? Rambam writes, beyond that, avapi shechelev behema tmeya ubeitze of tame asurin min haTorah. Even though it's true that the chelev, the fat of an animal that's not kosher, and the eggs of a non-kosher bird are asur min haTorah. Ein lokan alem shenemar bibsaram lo tochlu al habasar hu loke vein loke al habeitza v'al hachilev. I'm sorry, it's all chalav. I shouldn't have said chalav, it's all chalav. This is the milk, and it's milk and, makes more sense. Milk and eggs of non-kosher animals.
Read it again.
Av b'shechalav behemat tmeya ubeitzei of tamei asurim min haTorah, ein lokan aleim. Even though it's true that milk that comes from a non-kosher animal and eggs that come from a non-kosher bird are not kosher, but there's no malkut for them. Shneimar b'bisaram lo tochlu al habasar uloke v'ein uloke al habeitza v'al hachilev. Because the isur in the Torah that has an azara is only on the basar.
So what's the punishment?
Makan martut. V'hari ha'ochel otan ka'ochel chatzi shir shu asur min haTorah v'ein aloka aval makin oto makan martut. He gets makot, but only midorabana. In other words, it's asur midoraita with makos midorabana. Okay. This is what's called second. This is what Rabbi Bleich calls secondary yotzei min haTame. We'll see that he comes up with this term. Rav Chaim Salvechik actually came up with the term originally. He points out. Do I have the same thing twice here? No, it's just from the same place. It says, I don't know if we're going to have the headspace to read this inside, but we'll try. The idea that what comes from Tame is Tame teaches you two things. Number one, the Tara nolad min atmea isaro hu machmat atzmo. In other words, that cow that came from a pig, the cow that was born to a pig, is now itself not kosher. It's not like it's secondary not kosher because it happened to come from a pig. No, it is now a non-kosher cow. And if it were to have another cow, it would also be not kosher. Right? It's asur mitzad atzmo. But there's a second kind, which is that because it came from that object, it's asur. But it's not asur mitzad atzmo. That's the beitza and the chalav. In other words, an egg that comes from a non-kosher bird, right? The egg is not kosher, but only because it came from a non-kosher bird. But the egg itself is not considered like a non-kosher egg. It happened to come from a non-kosher bird, so it's not kosher. But the egg itself is not kosher. Rav Chaim is trying to come up with an explanation for a rationalization for why it's not going to have malkut. It's not considered basar anymore. Okay, that's what he's trying to come up with, for a reason why it's gotten downgraded. Doesn't make sense. Why?
You're saying the egg itself is not kosher. It just happens to come from a not kosher bird.
Yes.
That's the definition of not kosher.
What would it be akin to? It would be akin to, let's say, imagine you have a potato that gets dropped into a vat of pig soup. Yeah. Right. And then you take the potato out. What's the status of the potato? Not kosher, right? Let's say you manage to extract all the pig from it, though. Then what would be its status?
No, it would be kosher.
Why? Because the potato's not kosher. It's just...
Right, that's theoretical. You can't know that you've extracted every little...
You kind of could. You kind of could. Well, you could also be mavata. I mean, you kind of could know. I mean, not impossible. It's not impossible to know. So the point is, though, that it's the potato itself is not kosher. It's just happened to be, in this case, not kosher. So these eggs have a similar consistency. It's only relevant for the malkot, okay? But it's also going to be relevant for our argument. Let's jump to the bottom of Bleich and see how he uses it. He says, the above-cited Mishnah in Bechorot employs the term yotzei, that which emerges, to depict the concept of identity as a member of species. In other words, the cow that comes out of a pig is like a pig. It's a pig. That's what we consider it. It may be convenient to describe this category as Yotze 1, in order to distinguish it from a different category of Yotze, to be described presently and which may be labeled Yotze 2. Yotze 1, as applied to growth, accretion of tissue, and the enhanced bulk of a mature animal, serves as a halachic categorization of a living animal and of its descendants. There seems to be no source that would serve to extend that concept to some hypothetical post-mortem synthetic growth, that's what we're talking about, of additional non-kosher animal tissue or to tissue or cells plucked from a non-living animal. And what he says is the foregoing is not to say that meat artificially produced from non-kosher stem cells is ipso facto kosher. Rather, it implies that the status of such meat is governed by a different set of halachic principles which require further explication. The point being over here, how do we view these stem cells once they're removed from the animal? Is it still considered the animal, and then whatever grows from it is considered that cow? Or do we see it more like Yotzei 2, where it comes out of it, but it's no longer... It's not meat. Nobody considers eggs that come from a non-kosher bird to be meat. They're not. It's not meat. And certainly not the milk that comes from a camel. Yeah, milk that comes from a camel is not meat.
This is the cell of the meat.
Right, but the point is, do we see it still as cow? Or is the, are the stem cells more like cow? Or are they more like cow milk? But something like that. The cow eggs, something like that. And that would have ramifications more for the fleishik and pyrev stuff, but also for if it came from a non-kosher animal. If it came from a non-kosher animal, and it was merely yotzei too, then we would have a much easier time dealing with it when it gets added to with other stuff. In other words, if all the nutrients are going to make up the rest of the animal, that's really where it's coming from. So then, you could argue that it would become bata, let's say. Whereas if it's still the original animal, it's meat.
The health of spittle by meat, by non-kosher meat, is different from the health spittle of...
Conceptually over here, when the stem cells grow,
yes.
Question is, what are they growing? What is growing? If it's meat that's growing, then the media doesn't matter. And if the non-kosher, if it was came from non-kosher meat, then it remains non-kosher. That's what it seems to be. Let's say you took camel cells, right? And you grew them. If the camel cells are still camel, then the meat at the end of the day is going to be camel meat. And you're in trouble. But if the camel cells are just camel offshoot, then the media kind of takes over. And it's no longer considered camel. It was never camel meat. So it's just going to be something else.
Right. Either way, you're in trouble, though.
Because
if it came from the...
It's not the same yotzei min hatamei.
It's either camel, in which case it's a problem, or it's getting right. from the surroundings, which is also not kosher because it's blood or whatever.
But what if the surroundings were kosher?
Which they're not.
They're going to get there. Let's say they get to some kind of synthetic media that managed to give all the nutrients, right? So if it was cow meat, so then it remains cow meat. The nutrients just make it, just help the meat grow.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't cow meat, then it almost takes on the same status as the media itself. And whatever it grows into, it grows into. And it's going to be not kosher. It's going to be kosher. Seems to be the argument. All right. We'll stop there for tonight. Next time we'll do other stuff. We still have to get to... I'll tell you what we still have to get to.
If it was formed from it, an actual animal, it's hard for me to see it as the Yotzei 2.
What do you mean an actual animal? We're not growing an animal.
Well, yeah.
Growing meat.
You could, though.
Yes, you could.
It has all the properties that you could use it to grow the actual cow back.
Okay.
Right?
But...
So it's like a Yotzei 1, as I see it. That's what I'm... It's hard for me to... Uh-huh. It's not an egg.
Right. Okay.
Is this the same as cloning? They cloned the sheep once.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
I mean, it's definitely the same principles. Although I think they used... Anyways, what's still to come is gelatin is a huge issue. How we deal with gelatin versus how we deal with this.
What's
the difference between non-kosher gelatin? Also, is going to be an issue.
What's the difference
between non-kosher gelatin and kosher gelatin? Non-kosher gelatin, what we Ashkenazim consider to be non-kosher gelatin, usually comes from pig bones. And kosher gelatin sometimes comes from fish. Kosher fish. You can't find much kosher gelatin. There was a company that tried to do it in America, and it didn't work. It's not gelatin. There's no gelatin.
There's a company who was making, and I think this company was who produced marshmallows.
Yeah.
And they bought up all of the kosher gelatin they could find in the
right.
world.
Yeah.
A Belgian company, I think. They all the kosher gelatin in the world that they could find, they bought it. So they could make their marshmallows with it.